The next morning, as soon as day appeared, Aladdin was agreeably awakened by the singing not only of the birds which had roosted in the tree under which he had passed the night, but also of those which frequented the thick groves of the palace garden. When he cast his eyes on that wonderful edifice, he felt inexpressible joy at thinking he might soon be master of it again, and once more greet his dear Princess Badroulboudour. Pleased with these hopes, he immediately arose, went toward the princess's apartment, and walked some time under her window in expectation of her rising, that he might see her. During this expectation, he began to consider with himself whence the cause of his misfortune had proceeded, and after mature reflection, no longer doubted that it was owing to having trusted the lamp out of his sight. He accused himself of negligence in letting it be a moment away from him. But what puzzled him most was that he could not imagine who had been so envious of his happiness. He would soon have guessed this if he had known that both he and his palace were now in Africa, the very name of which would soon have made him remember the magician, his declared enemy. But the genie, the slave of the ring, had not made mention of the name of the country, nor had Aladdin inquired. The princess rose earlier that morning than she had done since her transportation into Africa by the magician, whose presence she was forced to support once a day, because he was master of the palace, though she had always treated him so harshly that he dared not reside in it. As she was dressing, one of the women, looking through the window, perceived Aladdin, and instantly told her mistress. The princess, who could not believe the joyful tidings, hastened herself to the window, and seeing Aladdin, immediately opened it. The noise of opening the window made Aladdin turn his head that way, and perceiving the princess, he saluted her with joy. "To lose no time," said she to him, "I have sent to have the private door open for you. Enter and come up." The private door, which was just under the princess's apartment, was soon opened, and Aladdin conducted up into the chamber. It is impossible to express the joy of both at seeing each other after so cruel a separation. After embracing and shedding tears of joy, they sat down, and Aladdin said, "I beg of you, princess, in heaven's name, before we talk of anything else, to tell me, both for your own sake, the Sultan, your father's, and mine, what has become of an old lamp which I left upon a shelf in my robing chamber when I departed for the chase."
"Alas, dear husband," answered the princess, "I was afraid of a misfortune might be owing to that lamp, and what grieves me most is that I have been the cause of it."
"Princess," replied Aladdin, "do not blame yourself, for I ought to have taken more care of it. But let us now think only of repairing the loss. Tell me what has happened, and into whose hands it has fallen." The princess then related how she had changed the old lamp for a new one, and how the next morning she found herself in the unknown country they were then in, which she was told was Africa, by the traitor who had transported her thither by his magic art.
"Princess," said Aladdin, interrupting her, "you have informed me who the traitor is by telling me we are in Africa. He is the most perfidious of men, but this is neither a time nor a place to give you a full account of his villainies. I desire you only to tell me what he has done with the lamp and where he has put it."
"He carries it carefully wrapped up in his bosom," said the princess, "and this I can assure you because he pulled it out before me and showed it to me in triumph."
"Princess," said Aladdin, "do not be displeased that I trouble you with so many questions, since they are equally important to us both. But to come to what most particularly concerns me, tell me, I conjure you, how so wicked and perfidious a man treats you."
"Since I have been here," replied the princess, "he repairs once every day to see me, and I am persuaded the little satisfaction he receives from his visits makes him come no oftener. All his addresses tend to persuade me to break that faith I have pledged to you, and to take him for my husband, giving me to understand I need not entertain hopes of ever seeing you again, for that you were dead, having had your head struck off by my father's order. He added, to justify himself, that you were an ungrateful wretch, that your good fortune was owing to him, and a great many other things of that nature which I forbear to repeat. But as he received no other answer from me but grievous complaints and tears, he was always forced to retire with as little satisfaction as he came.
I doubt not his intention is to allow me time to overcome my grief, in hopes that afterward I may change my sentiments. But my dear husband's presence removes all my apprehensions."
"I am confident my attempts to punish the magician will not be in vain," replied Aladdin. "Since my prince's fears are removed, and I think I have found the means to deliver you from both your enemy and mine, to execute this design, and I think I have found the means to deliver you from both your enemy and mine. To execute this design, it is necessary for me to go to the town. I shall return by noon, will then communicate my design, and what must be done by you to ensure success. But that you may not be surprised, I think it proper to acquaint you that I shall change my apparel, and beg of you to give orders that I may not wait long at the private door, but that it may be opened at the first knock." When Aladdin was out of the palace, he looked round him on all sides, and perceiving a peasant going into the country, hastened after him, and when he had overtaken him, made a proposal to him to change habits, which the man agreed to. When they had made the exchange, the countryman went about his business, and Aladdin to the city. After traversing several streets, he came to that part of the town where all descriptions of merchants had their particular streets according to their trades. He went into that of the druggists, and going into one of the largest and best furnished shops, asked the druggist if he had a certain powder, which he named. The druggist, judging Aladdin by his habit to be very poor, and that he had not money enough to pay for it, told him he had it, but that it was very dear. Upon which Aladdin, penetrating his thoughts, pulled out his purse, and showing him some gold, asked for half a drachm of the powder, which the druggist weighed, wrapped up in paper, and gave him, telling him the price was a piece of gold. Aladdin put the money into his hand, and returned to the palace, where he waited not long at the private door. When he came into the princess's apartment, he said to her, "Princess, perhaps the aversion you tell me you have for your captor may be an objection to your executing what I am going to propose, but permit me to say it is proper that you should dissemble a little, and do violence to your inclinations, if you would deliver yourself from him. If you will take my advice," continued he, "dress yourself this moment in one of your richest habits, and when the African magician comes, make no difficulty to give him the best reception, so that he may imagine time has removed your disgust at his addresses. In your conversation, let him understand that you strive to forget me, and that he may be the more fully convinced, invite him to sup with you, and tell him you should be glad to taste of some of the best wines of this country. He will presently go to fetch you some. During his absence, put into one of the cups which you are accustomed to drink of this powder, and setting it by, charge the slave you may order that night to attend you, on a signal you shall agree upon, to bring that cup to you. When the magician and you have eaten and drunk as much as you choose, let her bring you the cup, and then change cups with him. He will esteem it so great a favour that he will not refuse, but eagerly quaff it off. But no sooner will he have drunk than you will see him fall backward." When Aladdin had finished, "I own," answered the princess, "I shall do myself violence in consenting to make the magician such advances. But what cannot one resolve to do against a cruel enemy? I will therefore follow your advice, since both my repose and yours depend upon it." After the princess had agreed to the measures proposed by Aladdin, he took his leave and went and spent the rest of the day in the neighbourhood of the palace, till it was night and he might safely return to the private door.